Hi, everyone. This is Susan Hedstrom, the Executive Director for the Foundation for Prader-Willi Research, and I'm joined today by Lauren Schwartz-Roth, clinical psychologist and member of the FPWR research team.
Hi, everybody. I'm glad to be with you today. I also wanted to mention, but many of you probably know this, but I'm also a mom of a lovely young lady, 20 years old, with Prader-Willi syndrome. So I can kind of wear multiple hats and can try to look at these things from different perspectives.
We're bringing you this podcast to share tips for staying calm and managing anxiety during the time of the coronavirus. Everyone in some way, shape, or form is being affected by COVID-19. Here in California, we're sheltering in place. No matter where you live, your life has likely been disrupted in some way. I know I'm getting a lot of questions from my child with PWS as to when things will be happening, like going back to school or seeing his grandpa. I can't answer them concretely, which is stressing me out personally and leading to lots of anxiety in my child. So Lauren, what can we do as caregivers to stay calm and present for our children?
Thanks, Susan. So there's a lot of, as Susan mentioned, anxiety and uncertainty surrounding COVID-19 virus, and the information seems to be changing on a daily basis, which I think makes it even harder. And I've really been thinking a lot about this over the last few weeks, how it's affecting everyone, but most especially our Prader-Willi community, since I'm part of that community as well. It's near and dear to my heart. Sheltering in place and having activities canceled and all the other impacts that I think are challenging for caregivers, for people with Prader-Willi syndrome. Our kiddos, as you all know, don't generally cope well with change and uncertainty, and this whole situation is sort of the definition of what is happening now. Many people with PWS, I don't have to tell you all, have high levels of anxiety at their normal baseline. And during this time, it's not surprising that for our kids and loved ones, this would be quite a bit higher. So this is likely a difficult time for caregivers who are trying to cope not only with their own fears and concerns about the virus, but also those of their child with PWS, all while trying to keep ourselves calm and functioning during this stressful time. This is not an easy task, and one of the reasons why Susan and I thought it might be helpful to talk about this a little bit with everybody. Some of you may have attended the FPWR conference last October, but for those of you who did not, Dr. Elizabeth Dykens, who's an amazing Prader-Willi syndrome research trailblazer, gave a great talk about caregivers taking care of themselves and how important that is. And she shared several studies demonstrating that if we as caregivers take good care of ourselves, kids do better. This is especially true for parents of children with special needs. If we as caregivers take good care of ourselves, our kids do better. So, Susan, I know we have this recording of Dr. Dykens' talk available. Can you let everybody know how they can access that?
Of course. We have placed the recording of Dr. Dykens' presentation on the FPWR blog at fpwr.org. It's also available on our YouTube channel, and we will be sure to include it as a link in the transcript of this podcast.
Great. Great. Yes. Take a look at that. I think it can be quite helpful. She's a great speaker too. You know, one of the things I've really noticed and I hear again from over and over again from families and from clinicians is that our children with Prader-Willi syndrome seem to be particularly sensitive and connected to their parents, and they really take their cues from us. So if we can stay calm and manage our worry, it really does help our kids too. And for any of you who may have listened to the Facebook Live sessions that are being put on by the Vanderbilt Prader-Willi Research Group, Haley Hunt did a nice job of talking about that last weekend about, again, self-care for caregivers and how important it is for us to take time for ourselves. So I want to talk a little bit more about what we can as caregivers do to take care of ourselves during this time, so that we can be there for others in our family who need us. So the number one action step, and you've heard this before, but I think it's worth saying again, is to put on your own oxygen mask. Everybody's been on an airplane, I think, and heard the folks talk about the importance of putting your own oxygen mask on first before you take care of others. And I think that's very important. So when I think about self-care and taking care of myself, I try to remember that if I'm taking care of myself, I'm putting my own oxygen mask on, and then I can be available for others. So one of the first steps that or things that can be helpful is gratitude. Again, this has become very popular lately, but it's an old concept. It's been around for a while. But I think especially if you and your loved ones are currently in good health, remind yourself to feel grateful for that. I think it's easy to forget during a health crisis that right now we are healthy. The other thing I've heard a lot of families talk about is they're getting to spend more time with their family, and they're feeling grateful for that, and they're kind of going back to some of the more old-fashioned ways of connecting, family dinners, family game night. So those are all things to I think that we can feel grateful for.
And Lauren, I am seeing a lot of gratitude from folks on social media. There's pictures of people spending time with their families. I know personally the amount of time I'm spending with my kids, I've really valued. And it's really nice not being stressed about preparing dinner within this limited time crunch. Usually we're so frantic trying to get through our evening routine and get the kids fed that we can't enjoy our time together. I guess that's an advantage of not having a full day scheduled, is we can spend more time taking care of a few things.
Yes, agreed. I think it's sort of slowing things down a bit, and that has a downside, I think, but there are also some upsides to it. So it can be helpful to try to think about that. Some people will really formalize this gratitude practice by maybe writing down three things they feel grateful for at the end of the day or the beginning of the day, maybe keeping a little journal next to your bed to do that. And that can be very helpful as well. I've had also heard about and have patients who have done a gratitude kind of photo journal. So they've taken pictures of things that they feel grateful for each day and created a scrapbook. So there are a lot of different ways to do it. Can be very helpful. And there's been some very good research showing that it decreases anxiety. The second thing that I think can be helpful is practicing physical distancing, but not social distancing. This whole idea, this word social distance, has now become part of our lexicon. And but I want us to think about it as physical distancing, but staying connected. You know, we as humans are social creatures, and so are our children. And it can be really hard to be isolated and away from those that we care about and those that we're used to seeing and connecting with. So I think it's helpful if we can all think about ways that we and our kids can stay connected to others while also keeping everyone safe and healthy. Another thing to be grateful for is technology. You know, this is a time when technology can really be our friend. It's a good time to connect and reconnect with old friends and family via all kinds of digital technologies. I'm hearing about people doing FaceTime playdates, and connecting with friends that way, Skyping, and even calling people on the phone. Sometimes we forget about that, but that can be a really great way. And I would encourage people not to just text or post on social media. There's something much more, I think, useful and meaningful to seeing someone like on FaceTime or hearing their voice on the phone. It does a lot more for our mental health and anxiety than it does just typing a message, although typing a message can be good as well. This is a little bit off topic, but I think it's worth mentioning. There was a study done a few years ago where they had college kids who were anxious about a test they were taking, and for half of the kids, they had them received a text from their mom before the test wishing them good luck, and the other half got a phone call from their mom before they took the test. And they found that the anxiety was significantly decreased in the group that got the phone call, but not the text. So I do think there's something really powerful about hearing the voice of someone you care about. Also, FaceTime and Instagram are doing a number of live events and virtual social gatherings that could be a place for folks to connect and have community. And as I mentioned, the Vanderbilt Prader-Willi Syndrome Research Group is doing some great Facebook live events over the last few days for parents, and I would encourage everyone to check that out as well. We really want to feel connected and cared for, and social relationships are a key to us feeling happier, to decrease stress. So find ways to connect with others so you don't feel isolated and so lonely. And any connection is better than no connection. It may sound dramatic, but it really can help. A third area to focus on is taking care of your body. This is important for our mental and physical health as well as our emotional well-being. Number one, and you've probably heard this before, but it's worth mentioning again, try to get a good night's sleep. Unplug for at least 30 minutes before you want to go to sleep. That means stay away from your phone and digital technology. Instead, read, listen to music, and meditate. Now, this is the one area that I would say it's okay to use your phone if you're using a meditation app to help you go to sleep or relax before you go to bed. And a lot of people like the Calm app or Headspace or 10% Happier are different meditation apps that I've heard families talk about that can be helpful. And several of them also have a kids version, so they could even be useful for your children to use during this time. I know my daughter really likes some of the kids' sleep stories that are on the Calm app. A lot of folks have told me they've had trouble, myself included at times, falling asleep right away. I think we're getting so much information and stimulation that can be hard to turn our mind off. But even if you don't fall asleep right away, just enjoy the quiet rest. And even if you're not asleep, your body's benefiting from the rest. That's at least what my mom always used to tell me when I was a little girl. I do think it's helpful. If you do find that you're worrying a lot at nighttime, it might be helpful to set a time during the day, kind of what I think of as worry time, to set about 10 minutes, set a timer, write down your worry thoughts so they don't keep you awake at night. Just for 10 minutes, just sort of, as someone told me, just vomit on paper, just write down everything you're worried about. Don't worry about complete sentences, spelling, just get it out. And then when you're done, put it away so you have the image of being done with it. And some people also find it useful to tear up the page. There's really no reason to keep that information. You're just trying to sort of get it out of your head, or even to burn it. But I encourage you to be careful about lighting fires, of course. But that can be very satisfying to just kind of let it go at that level. Routine is very important during this time, so getting out of bed at a reasonable hour and around the same time each day. Eat food that nourishes you, but try to be aware if you're stress eating and find another busy task to do instead. And try not to drink too much alcohol, certainly occasionally having a glass of wine or the cocktail of your choice is fine, but this can be a time with levels of stress where people might be apt to drink a little bit more, so pay attention to that.
I've heard a lot of jokes about people saying how much weight they're going to gain throughout this whole experience. Any suggestions for how we can avoid stress eating?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do think since we're all home more and close to our refrigerators and probably a little bit bored and unhappy, that eating can be a way of dealing with some of those emotions. So I think that is an excellent point to bring up. One of the things that I often tell my patients is to ask yourself when you're reaching for some food or you're walking towards the refrigerator, before you open the refrigerator or the cupboard, or in our case, unlock the refrigerator or cupboard, Ask yourself, what am I really feeling? Am I feeling hungry or am I feeling something else? And a lot of the time, I think you're going to notice that what you're feeling is something else. Maybe you're feeling bored. Maybe you're feeling anxious. Maybe you're not sure what to do. But if the answer to that question is not hungry, then walk away and try to find something else to do. Even if it's play a game on your phone or go outside and get some fresh air, just kind of try to break that habit of reaching for food, which I think all of us do when we're feeling other emotions. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Another thing, so number four, and this can kind of help with some of that virus weight gain that you're talking about, is movement. You know, for most people, their regular exercise routine has probably been disrupted. And I know my husband used to go to the gym every morning, rain or shine, and now, you know, he's not doing that. So we have to be creative to think about ways we can keep exercising and moving each day. If the weather's okay, go outside, take a walk or a run. You'll not only get exercise, but even spending time in nature, which has been good for reducing stress in some research studies, can be really helpful. Also, fresh air. It really can help change your perspective and kind of break some feelings of being stuck inside. And, you know, even if it's raining, I mean, I live in Seattle, so we have a lot of rain here. If you have the right clothes, you can usually go outside. And sometimes it can be rather refreshing to go outside and take a walk in the rain. So I would really encourage folks to be creative and think about ways they can keep moving. You can also take advantage of some online resources. You know, there's exercise YouTube videos for yoga or cardio workouts. Some people have some exercise apps that they've used and have enjoyed. Or even just turn on some music and dance for 15, 20 minutes, and your kids might really love to join you. That could be a fun activity to do each day. But do something active each day. It will really make a difference in how you feel and how you're coping.
I've seen some really great virtual workouts. In fact, one member of our community here in the Santa Monica area, she's been providing live Zoom bar workouts. So you actually get to work out live with other people, but from your own home. I thought that was a really interesting workout model.
That is a great idea. And I bet there's going to be more of that. So hunt around a bit on the internet. I bet you'll find some great opportunities out there. And how wonderful that someone in our own community is engaging in that. So that's really, really good. Next area I wanted to focus on, and let's see, there are seven, so we're on number five, so we're almost done, is to be alert to potential information overload. This is probably my number one recommendation to most people, in addition to keep moving and exercising. There is so much news. I mean, I'm getting so many emails a day about different things related to COVID-19. If anything you see on TV, any news channel, any, you know, is just giving you so much information each day. So it's no wonder that we're all feeling overwhelmed, really overstimulated, and a bit agitated. It's good to stay up to date with the latest news, but it is really easy to just get kind of on overload. So I really think it can be helpful, especially if you're feeling anxious or stirred up, to put a limit on the amount of news and information you take in. It can be helpful to maybe consider one time a day listening to the news or reading a trusted news resource that you feel you can trust. And then really take a break from the news for the rest of the day. Kind of put yourself, I heard someone talk about a news diet, so kind of like sugar, only limit your intake of it. And some people, if you're really feeling quite overwhelmed, it's okay to put yourself in a media bubble for a day or two. If something really big happens, you'll hear about it. So I don't think we have to worry about missing out. It is important to protect ourselves from getting overwhelmed and agitated. especially again for our kids, as I mentioned earlier, they really pick up on our anxiety and agitation, even if we're not talking about it. I think they can feel it in the air. So the degree to which we can kind of take care of ourselves in this way, I think is really important for our kids. I know when I did this kind of early on when the news was just coming out, it really helped my sleep to limit my news intake. So I highly recommend it.
Lauren, I would just jump in and say how much I agree with you on this statement. I found myself becoming more and more anxious the more news I was watching. And I do still stay up to date, but we've implemented family movie night, which is really helpful because it gets me off the news in the evenings before bed. So it allows my mind to go elsewhere for a little while.
Yeah, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. Opportunity to get to watch all those movies you didn't have time to before. So two more ideas before we stop for today. One is helping others. One way to improve our mood, especially if you're feeling down or depressed, is to look for ways that we can help others. This might be a little bit challenging with social distancing at this point, but I think with a little creativity, we can figure out ways that we can reach out to others, even a phone call to a neighbor or relative who might be lonely or is living alone could really brighten their day and might make you feel better as well. You could even bring that extra roll of toilet paper or Clorox wipes to a neighbor, although I don't know whether anybody's feeling like they have any to share. But if you do, I know my youngest daughter, not the one who has Prader-Willi, has been doing a bit of baking. And one of the things I've been doing to help get those sweets out of the house is we've been sharing them with neighbors. So there are lots of ways that I think we can help others and stay connected. This is really a useful treatment that is used for depression. And it's to, you know, to kind of help others when you're feeling down. It reminds us that we're not alone and we're a community, which again can help reduce anxiety too. So my last thought is to continue with or create some comforting routines. Most of us have rituals or routines that we used to do every day that we didn't even notice, but they made us feel grounded and they made us just feel kind of normal. And most of those have been changed. You know, it might be going to the gym or connecting with moms when you drop your kid off at school or even going to hang out at your favorite coffee place and read the news. So what can we do instead? This is a time to develop some new rituals that can give us a sense of routine. Think about some ways that you can have activities through your day that can help you feel more grounded and normal. And these can be really simple or they can be more involved. Some things I've heard people do is having their morning cup of coffee or tea on the porch, kind of outside. Then you get a little bit of nature, some fresh air, and your morning caffeine. That can just be a nice routine to set the tone of your day. Listen to the birds. Could take a walk with your kids in the morning or your dog or after lunch, reading a bedtime story each night, having movie night, as Susan mentioned, or listening to some relaxing music with your children. Any routines can be useful. Just stick to some things that you might enjoy. Keep it simple. One of the things that routines do that we don't often think about, but they're very important, is they help to make the world feel predictable, which gives us a greater feeling of safety. And I also think it's important to stick to our regular routines of getting dressed each morning, brushing our teeth, kind of doing the normal things you do, even though you might not be leaving the house. Also, helpful to do this with your kids as well. Keep them getting dressed, doing their hygiene, can help everybody feel more grounded. So my parting thoughts are to stay connected in community, even if it's virtual. And keep your brain and your body healthy and active.
Thank you, Lauren, for sharing this information with us today. I do find it somewhat humorous that, you know, we as parents can create these comforting routines and schedules because most of us have been doing this for quite a while with our kids. So these routines that are so helpful with our children can also help us. For our listeners, I hope that you found this podcast helpful for staying calm and managing anxiety during this stressful time. Our next podcast will be available next week, and on that podcast, we will be discussing mental health in PWS. Times of change can increase the risk of serious mental health issues such as psychosis, depression, and severe anxiety in our loved ones with PWS. So in our next podcast, we're going to share what to look for to help identify mental health issues and the steps that you can take to address and treat them. We hope that you'll join us again next week. Have a great rest of your day.